This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Everybody, happy Tuesday. Already February 23rd. Yeah, this is a leap year this year, so actually get an extra day of February this year. Anyway, yeah, the weather's incredible. We got 60 degree weather all week. The whole weekend was unbelievable. Sunny. The snow was gone by like Sunday afternoon. All the ice on the lakes, you know, was melted. Yesterday was, you know, literally a spring day. I mean, no snow, nice and warm. Today, the same thing. Supposed to get tonight, it's going to drop down. We might get like a half an inch or whatever. But then they said it's going to turn to rain, so that's not going to even matter. And then on Thursday, it's going to be back, you know, up around 60 again. Jeez, it's unbelievable. That's New England. Even when they're not tampering with the weather, that's New England. You know, skiing one minute and swimming the next. So bizarre. But anyway, yeah, I haven't mentioned the call-in number for a while, so let me mention that again. Anybody wants to call in? Any questions or comments, negative, positive, the number to do so is 747-222-8807. Again, that's 747-222-8807. My email is truthhertzradio@aol.com, spelling Hertz like megahertz, H-E-R-T-Z. So again, that's truthhertzradio@aol.com. Comments or suggestions or, you know, requests for notes for any of the topics that I cover. Or for that matter, any of my books, you know, I can send them to you, RTF. There's The New World Disorder. There's the Piercing the Fog of 9/11. And then my personal favorite, An Alternative View of the Distant Past. You know, wherein I cover everything from diffusionism, you know, the idea that Columbus was not the first to discover America, one of many lies we've been told through the years. I also cover catastrophism, ancient technology, you name it, it's in there. I even talk about plasma cosmology and its effects on the Earth. It's, you know, the Earth's geology. Not just the Earth, other planets as well. It's amazing. There's a whole field called comparative planetology, where scientists compare different features on different planets and different moons. It's great. It's a fascinating study. But they never talk about the commonalities of what caused these formations, like plasma cosmology, for example. You know, you've got features on the surface of Mars very similar to ones found on Earth on an even grander scale that obviously are the result of massive plasmic discharges, huge interplanetary lightning bolts, if you will, from, you know, the planets having much stronger magnetic fields in the past. And they exchange these lightning blasts, if you will, much like when you walk across a rug with your sneakers and you touch the doorknob. And, you know, that's a discharge of electrons, balancing out an imbalance of a charge between you and the doorknob. Either you're low in electrons or the doorknob is, so that when you touch it, there's an exchange. The same thing happened between planets. On occasion, when there was an imbalance from one to the other planet, when one planet's magnetotail crossed over another planet, boom, there were these massive blasts. Ancient legends talk about this. And, you know, we can see in the geology of various planets that the signs of these things having happened. Anyway, so, that, you know, that's one of many things I talk about in this book. Just absolutely fascinating. So, you know, comparative planetology is a great science, fascinating study, but mainstream science is not going to point out how a lot of these similarities visible on the various planets and moons in the solar system actually came about. Kind of like how, you know, you can get a PhD in economics, but they're never going to tell you how the monetary system is a goddamn rigged freaking scam of a game. You gotta love it, man. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. Can spend years studying any given subject and never, ever understand it, but be filled with pride in thinking that you do. How many numbnuts with PhDs think they have a full understanding of the particular subject they majored in, and they'll scowl at you for daring to question their divine wisdom when they know virtually nothing? I love people whose heads are filled with garbage, just empty dribble, and they think that they're know-it-alls. Oh, God, I've run into so many over the years, just absolute wastes of human flesh. My term for them, my personal favorite, they're animated orgasms. That's all they are, just wastes of human flesh. Absolute mindless frickin' idiots. Anyway, Massachusetts has quite a few of them, actually.
The Harvard graduates. Oh, God. Give me a break.
Anyway, picking up in this series here on La Vaticana, let's talk about the Vatican Bank. No discussion of the corruption of this institution would be complete without talking about this. Right off the top, before I even begin, again, just a little reminder. I think I mentioned this later in these notes, but the CIA fact book states that, let me see if I have, yeah, I do have that in here, actually. States that this institution has the largest holdings of any bank in the world. I have no reason to doubt that whatsoever. In fact, you don't need the CIA fact book to point that out. Common sense should tell you that, guys. I'm not trying to minimize the Rothschild banking empire and the horrific crimes they've been guilty of and the massive hordes of wealth that they have sucked into their hands by ripping everybody else off. But guys, their wealth cannot compete with this institution simply because they have been at it much, much longer. They were around way before there was ever a Rothschild, or a Bauer, I should say, because that's the original frickin' name. They were around ripping people off long before they came along. And, you know, that wealth has just continually accumulated century after century after century. They have always been coming up with new ways to scam people, to rip them off. In the Dark Ages, you know, there was the sale of indulgences. Holy Jesus Christ. Actually, they still do that. But, you know, as time has gone on, they've come up with even more ways. They don't do it on the scale they used to. And, you know, in some countries like the U.S., it doesn't fly so well. But in a lot of third world countries, yeah, they still do it. But, you know, they charge you for a mass. How many people do this? I personally know of quite a few people over the years that have and still do that have requested masses for departed loved ones, usually on the anniversary of someone's death. They'll ask the priest, you know, they'll pay them. I don't even know what the going rate is now. But, you know, the priest's earnings aren't just, you know, it's not just the salaries that they get every week, their little check that's handed out to them. They get all kinds of kickback benefits, guys. They get paid for weddings. It's freaking unbelievable. They live pretty handsomely comfortable lives, I'll tell you right now. Generally speaking, more so than Protestant ministers, although their freaking hind parts are well cushioned too, don't worry. They're well pampered. They get their diapers changed pretty regularly too. But anyway, when you think about it, it's so disgusting. It's like looking at these so-called charities. I did a show on that a while back with a fraud, all tribal run. But, you know, how the official statistics admit that when you give to any freaking charity, 8 cents on the dollar on average is all that goes to the actual fund, the charity fund that you're contributing to. The rest goes into the bastard's pocket that runs the damn thing. 8 cents on the dollar. I can tell you now, that's the official admission. You can bet it's less than that. You know, they'll squeak out a few pennies here and there just for window dressing. Makes me think of that 2020 show back in the 90s that they did on organized religion. It was actually really good. Diane Sawyer narrated it. They investigated people like Robert Tilton. He went belly up as a result of this exposure. Good, good. But, you know, they talked about how he was giving money to this orphanage in Cuba. In fact, he was he had a drive, you know, on a telethon or whatever, specifically for that orphanage. And the whole time he's, you know, got the phones ringing in the background and petitioning people to donate. He's showing clips of the orphanage and the kids in the orphanage and, you know, how their contributions are benefiting them, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, they followed up on this. They went to Cuba. They found the orphanage and they discovered that it was an old broken down hellhole of a place, rat infested, you know. And these kids were, you know, living in just deplorable, substandard conditions, barely fed, you know, whatever. And so she went to the head administrator and she asked him, have you ever heard of Robert Tilton? He says, oh, yes, yes. Is it true that he sends you money, you know, every month? Oh, yes, yes, yes. She said, well, he says on his show that he sends $25,000 a month, which is a joke in itself because, you know, that bastard was raising millions. He was a big name in televangelism back in the 90s, guys. Millions of listeners. He was making millions of dollars a month. There's no question. Anyway, so, you know, to be sending, even if he was sending the $25,000 he claimed, that's still a drop in the bucket compared to what he was collecting. But anyway, so she asked, how much money does he send you a month? He says, $25. $25. He said he was sending $25,000. So she says, do you realize that he claims that he's sending $25,000? He says, oh, yes, yes, I know, I know, I know he... Well, why don't you say something? This is fraud. He says, ma'am, we're happy to get whatever we can get. We're desperate for money. So, you know, if he sends 25, we're not going to complain. Imagine that. God damn it. But anyway, you know, just to illustrate how this whole frickin' system works, people think, yeah, I know those secular charities can't be trusted. That's why I give to my church. Really? Really now? You think your church is any more trustworthy? God damn it. I'll take a secular enterprise any day over a religious one. They all suck ass. They're all going to screw you and rip you up. But guys, nobody does it better than religious institutions. They screw you more. You're much more likely to have a larger percentage of what you donate given to the cause that you're donating to in a secular institution than with a religious one. Oh, what a twisted world we live in. Everything is the very opposite of what people think it is. The very opposite of what, you know, is professed to the public. And the public sucks it up every single time. All you got to do is give a pretty little smile for the camera. You know, use the word Jesus every once in a while. And wow, you suck them right in. They lap it up. Anyway.
I give to my church.
Oh, you stupid. Hey, keep it up. Keep it up. Sucker. 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 I see it all the time, guys. Well, I used to see it all the time. Every week, people bringing in the little tithe envelopes, giving to the Lord. You know, I love this one. I actually heard this on many occasions where people would say that, you know, if it was pointed out to them that, you know, you give this money, you don't even have any accountability as to how it's being spent. Don't you know that there's people that are pocketing a lot of this and not giving account, you know, blah, blah, blah. Do you know what their answer is to that?
Well, I'm giving it to the Lord. And if there are people that choose to, you know, use this inappropriately, they're going to have to answer to God one day. But I'm doing my part, giving it to the Lord.
In other words, they don't care if their money is being pocketed. And it is. But they don't care. They're so goddamn brainwashed that they're willing to literally piss away fat wads of cash every week. And, you know, when it's a tithe-paying church, and a good many churches do embrace this idea of a tithe, it's 1% of their income, guys, before taxes. Did I say 1%? 10%. 10% of their income before taxes. That's a sizable little frickin' chunk. And then, you know, if you throw in an offering besides that, a lot of churches compel their gullible followers to do that, to pay a tithe and an offering. So that's 10%. Usually the offering is another 15, another 5, totaling to 15%. 15% of your wages every week being pissed away, and they have them so duped that even if they find out that some of their money is, or perhaps all of it is being misappropriated, if there's some monkey at the central office there skimming, they don't care. They're going to pay it anyway. Holy crap, man. Once again, any tithe payers out there, I got a bridge, okay? It's up for sale. Send me the check, any amount of your choosing. It doesn't really matter. Just send me the check. And I'll mail it to you. I got a lot of bridges, actually. I got a whole bunch of them at my disposal. All of you tithe payers out there, just send me the check. Suggested donation, $800,000. But, you know, God damn it, guys. This is how these bastards work. They actually suggest. Do you ever watch them, these televangelist bastards? They'll give suggestions. You know,
$1,000, $500, $50, whatever you can afford.
50 is the lowest they usually go. Unbelievable. Pat Robertson has his, oh, what the hell does he call that? Something club. Not the 700 club. He has another club, you know, for people to donate to. Jesus, I think it's the $1,000 club or something like that, where you donate $1,000 a month. I mean, it's just so over the top. God damn it. It's unbelievable. And he's always smiling at the camera as you hear the phones ringing. Praise the Lord, there's some calls coming in right now. Amen. Amen. You didn't know that amen had three syllables, did you? Amen. But old fart, he's still going at it. Still going at it. All these years, still sucking people dry. They're still falling for it. All the scandals that that guy has been caught in, all the exposures that have been done on him, never on the mainstream news, though. Oh, no, they love the guy. But there have been books written, lots of websites exposing that little bastard. What was that book? Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Not that I'm a big fan of that guy. What the hell's his name from the... Oh, he writes for The Guardian, the BBC. Oh, jeez, I can't even think of his name now. I interviewed him years ago on Oracle. At the time, I thought, oh, yeah, this guy's a truth teller. And he did. You know, he has written some good stuff over the years. But come on, guys, he's a monkey like the rest of them. Can't think of his name now. What the hell? Greg Palast. Hey, what do you know? I'm not so senile after. Greg Palast, he did do a good hit piece on him in his book, Best Democracy Money Can Buy. He's got a whole chapter in there on Pat Robertson. But, you know, even though this guy has been exposed many times over, it hasn't affected him because, again, the mainstream media, it's how it works, guys. Many other televangelists have been attacked and exposed in the mainstream media, but not him because, again, he's well connected. Gotta love it.
They're very selective in who they expose, aren't they?
Some people not only will never get exposed, they'll get praised regardless. Your corruption can far exceed that of others they have exposed, but you'll be praised if you have tribal ass breath. Oh, again, it's so repulsive. And that anybody thinks... How anybody can think that you can trust these bastards in the media at all? Just like the pageantry guys with the election. I can't believe that there are truthers, sincere truthers, you know, real, genuine truthers, that think that there's any hint of legitimacy to anything that goes on in mainstream media or with, you know, the election and the Donald Trump stuff. But I guess the other day Trump did launch a public attack on his not-so-holiness, which, again, that's great. That's commendable. You know, three claps and two giggles. And, but, guys, again, it's just rhetoric. That's all it is. He's part of the pageantry, part of the stage show. Don't fall for his menagerie. Jesus, man, it's all fake, God. There's no sincerity to any of these monkeys. While you might enjoy comments he makes like that, and they are commendable in and of themselves, that doesn't redeem him. Don't forget, guys, I did a show on him back in the fall, quoting at least a dozen times where he has licked the hind parts of that illegitimate country in the Middle East. The Palestinian murdering bastard regime in the Middle East. He loves it and says that that's our priority, to protect that nation. Come on, man. What more proof do you need than that? I brought that up to a guest not too long ago, and his response was,
well, what do you expect? They all do that.
Well, of course, and that's the problem. That's why you can't trust any of them. They're all sold out from the word go. I don't care about their rhetoric. And that's all it is frickin' rhetoric. I don't care what they say. How can you possibly, God damn it, Jesus Christ, how can you possibly care what they say? You might appreciate certain comments, and yeah, they'd be good to quote from to show people, hey, look, even this guy says that the Pope's a piece of crap. Well, you know, can't you see it? But it doesn't redeem that person. It doesn't make that person trustworthy. Doesn't mean that they're on the side of truth. They're just spewing rhetoric for window dressing purposes. God damn it. People, don't fall for the pageantry. If they're on TV, they're already bought and paid for. It's like that friggin' bag of hot wind in Austin there with his bullhorn appearing on Fox News. Give me a break. As they're blazoning his frickin' website, Infowars.com, right on the screen. Yeah. Yeah. That little tribal whorehouse network is really going to advertise somebody that's really telling the truth. Come on. They would never have him on in the first place. He was on the goddamn History Channel. He did a show with that guy. What the hell is his name now? Decoded there, that show. You know, he wrote a book, too, Decoded. I forget his name. That guy's a piece of raging crap, 33rd degree Mason scumbag. And there's Alex buddying up with him, chumming up. God, it's so vomit-inducing. How people can't see through this thin, and I mean very thin veil, beyond me. Anyway, enough rambling. Jeez, quarter of the show's gone here, and I haven't even got started yet. All right, let's get into these notes on the Vatican Bank here. There's many people who aren't even aware of the existence of the Vatican Bank. They don't even know the Vatican has a bank. There's even some Catholics that don't know. There's still others who outright deny that it actually exists when the subject gets brought up. But nevertheless, it's real and it's incredibly powerful. And of course, it's outrageously corrupt. How could it not be? The Vatican Bank lies at the very center of the Vatican, next to the Santa Ana Gate, an area that is unavailable to the public. It's officially known as the Institute for Religious Works. Just by calling it that, see, you're supposed to think that, oh, everything it does is above board. Why, it's a godly institution. Religious Works. Although, again, it has nothing to do, quite obviously, with religion, except in reference to the money changers in the temple, if you will. As we read about in Matthew 21:12, I'll read that passage and get back, guys. Stick with us.
There's a resurgence of anti-Semitism because at this point in time, Europe has not yet learned how to be multicultural. And I think we're going to be part of the throes of that transformation, which must take place. Europe is not going to be the monolithic societies that they once were in the last century. Jews are going to be at the center of that. It's a huge transformation for Europe to make. They are now going into a multicultural mode, and Jews will be resented because of our leading role. But without that leading role and without that transformation, Europe will not survive.
Guys, welcome back. So here's the this passage I was making reference to. And again, who cares what this goddamn book says? But you just got to love it because, you know, what the Vatican Bank does is the very same type of thing that Jesus condemned the Pharisees for doing. Here it is. And Jesus went into the temple of God and cast out all them that sold and bought in the temple and overthrew the tables of the money changers and the seats of them that sold doves. And then, you know, later Christ gets mad and says, you have made my father's house a den of thieves. And that's just what the Vatican Bank is, guys. They have turned what is supposed to be, it never has been, what they want the people to think is a house of God. And what I mean by that is it's not really a religious institution. The religion itself is phony anyway, but it doesn't matter. You know, there's a lot of people who think it's real. There's even priests who think it's real. But those are the top guys at the Vatican. They know it's not real. It was never intended to be a religious institution. It's the cloak that they use to hide their political and financial aims. When it comes to the Vatican Bank, guys, this is why it's off limits to the public. It's very secretive. Like I said, a lot of Catholics don't even know the frickin' thing exists. Just like when you go to Auschwitz, you're never going to be shown the pool that they have that they use for the entertainment of the inmates or the theater. You have to ask to be shown these things. And then for obvious reasons, they don't want to show it because people are going to start asking questions. Well, wait a minute. If this was an extermination camp, why are they providing for their entertainment, you know, for their refreshment on a hot summer day? You know, it doesn't make any sense. Well, so it is here with this. They don't show the Vatican Bank. They don't talk about it. They prefer you not even know about it because it's just a hotbed of frickin' outrageous corruption. It's a den of thieves in the house of the Lord. By the way, I have to point this out. You know, a lot of people will praise the great Jesus, you know, for cleansing the temple of the money changers. First of all, as I said yesterday, the great Jesus threw a temper tantrum. He got angry, which of course is one of the works of the flesh, which Paul says is going to keep us out of the kingdom. There's a big problem there, isn't there? But nevertheless, they think that what Jesus did was great. He purged the temple of these corrupt money changers. Oh, knock it off. Even though you can applaud such an act as that, you know, you would have liked to have been there to see that. That must have been a great sight. It doesn't matter, guys. The goddamn you know, the Essenes felt the same way. They hated the scribes and Pharisees for their corruption. So if it was an Essene that went in and did that, and by the way, Jesus most likely was a friggin' Essene anyway. But, you know, even if it was an openly professed Essene that went in there and did that, would that make the Essenes a good religion? How about the Zealots? They hated the scribes and Pharisees for their corruption too. if a zealot went in there, and by the way, there's evidence Jesus was a zealot too, just like his frickin' disciple Simon. Simon the Zealot. Just because Jesus cleansed the temple of the money changers does not make him a great man that we should emulate and look up to and respect and think he's on our side. Oh, shut up. Get a clue. That really is a common refrain among Bible dupes. He stood up against the corruption of the Pharisees. He wasn't an evil Jew. He was a good Jew. Oh, knock it off. No, he wasn't. As I pointed out before, at the time of the, in the first century, and then leading up to the revolt in 70 AD, you know, that caused the Romans to come in and sack Jerusalem. The ones who sided with the scribes and Pharisees, guys, were the right ones, not the ones who opposed them when it came to their position regarding Rome. The scribes and Pharisees were the ones who were right. The Jesus followers and the fanatic followers of all of the other, you know, insurgents and insurrectionists and whatnot, they were the ones who were wrong. And look where it got them. How right could they have been? All their protestation of the scribes and Pharisees, what did it bring them? It got their nation devastated. If they had done like they should have and been grateful to Rome for the things that Rome did for them, and Rome did a hell of a lot for them. It built their goddamn temple for them. They should have been content living under Roman rule. Rome was not oppressive to them. Rome bent over backwards for them. But no, Jesus and all the other rebel rousers of the first century were angry with the scribes and Pharisees for capitulating to Rome. And that's not even capitulating. That's simply being content living under, you know, someone else's rule. When they're being kind to you, they're not making any problems for you. Why stir up trouble? They wanted power, ladies and gentlemen, the Jesus movement. They did. They wanted, you know, the old glory days of Moses to come back, or at least what they thought was, you know, how much truth there are to those stories. But there is some truth, as I pointed out before. You know, when the Hyksos were expelled from Egypt, they used the Nubians to do their fighting for them, and they sacked multitudes of cities in Canaan. Scores. Scores of cities were sacked, burned. Now, there is some truth to that. So anyway, they wanted to bring back those glory days. Let's sack and loot and burn Rome. That's what they wanted. And if the Pharisees can't be brought around to our way of thinking, we'll sack and burn them too. Or we'll have the Romans sack and burn them for us. God damn it, man. This is Christianity, ladies and gentlemen. This is what it is. This is how it began. Stay tuned if you haven't heard those shows yet. I'm going to be covering that maybe next week, maybe after I finish this series on La Catholica Church here. Of all the shows I've done exposing that friggin' book and all of its BS, probably the single most important shows that I've done are those that expose the great Jesus as nothing but an insurrectionist, just like so many others in the first century. He was a troublemaker. He was not wrong for going against the Pharisees. By the way, another thing the Pharisees were right about, not that I'm a fan of them either, but I mean, you know, their arguments made a hell of a lot more sense. If you were going to pick sides, you'd have to go with the Pharisees, guys. Not only were they right and Jesus was wrong about wanting to rise up against the Romans, the Pharisees were also right in their loose adherence to the Torah. Of course, you know, they had more Talmudic ideas, which was a bunch of BS too. But the fact that they weren't so stringently adhering to the Torah, good for them. The Torah is a piece of crap. Moses is a piece of crap. How many people today, mindless boy, fall for the Moses was a great man of God BS. Yeah. And Joseph and the whole rest of the bunch of scoundrels. Oh, and little queen bitch Esther. Oh, God. These people read that book all the time, and yet they've never really read it. They never read it. It's kind of like, do you ever read late at night when you're really tired? You can go through, you know, half a dozen pages, and all of a sudden you stop and realize, oh, my God, what have I just read? None of it soaked in. You realize, I'm too tired. I'm not absorbing any of this. So the next day you try to, you know, pick up where you consciously last left off, and you realize, yeah, I think I read 6 to 8 pages here. You got to go back several pages and read it all over again because none of it sunk in. And as you're reading it again, you're realizing, oh my God, this is one of the most important parts of the book. How did I not even understand what I was reading? You know, I was going to skip over this. If I picked up where I left off last night, I would miss some of the most important parts of the book. Did you ever do that? I think that's how Bible dupes read their damn book. They're reading it. They're mouthing the words, or at least mentally, they're sounding the words out in their head. But they're not putting it together. They're not understanding what the hell it is they're reading. Quite obviously, they're not, because if they really understood it, they couldn't possibly believe it. Isn't it scary how the mind works? When you're told that that pile of freshly dumped cow crap is a fly farm, you're never going to see it for what it is. It's going to be a cute little fly farm. It's a pile of crap. So it is with the Bible, guys. It is a raging, stenching, foul, fly-infested pile of maggot-infested pile of crap. But because people have it in their head that it's the Word of God, they're never going to smell it. They're never going to see it for what it is. That's scary. You won't find anything the likes of that in the animal kingdom, guys. Animals know something that's dangerous, and they stay the hell away from it. Not in the human realm. Again, you can sell people, and it happens all the time. People are sold piles of crap all the time, and they can't get enough of it. They'll pay the top dollar for it. They'll give all of their time and energy to it. Something that is real and important, they shun. Something that's true and vital for their very existence. Nope, they'll piss all over that. But they'll drool over lies. You just gotta love it, man. You gotta love it. I really wonder sometimes how the hell I wound up on this goddamn crap hole of a planet. I really do. What the hell am I doing here? Do you ever wonder that? How the hell did I wind up in this crap hole? There has to be other worlds in this universe that are inhabited with intelligent individuals that don't work like this. Their brain isn't wired like this. There's got to be any number of other worlds out there that we could have been born on where we didn't have to spend our short existence with mindless asses. Why couldn't we have been born on one of those planets? To be stuck here in this friggin' maggot-infested world of mindless asses that lick the hind parts of those who are kicking them in the teeth. Man, it's so sickening. Anyway, back to our notes. As I said, the CIA says the Vatican Bank has the largest holdings of any bank in the world. This would apparently include the Bank of England, the Rothschild holdings, all of the central banks of the world. Yeah, apparently that would include the World Bank, the IMF. The BIS, the Bank of International Settlements, on and on it goes. Yeah, the Vatican Bank has more than all of them. Did you know that, amongst other things, the world's top drug peddlers, guys, have their accounts at the Vatican Bank.
Drug peddlers like the CIA.
They do. Anyway, with that much money in its vaults, how could this institution be anything but corrupt, guys? Money is power, and power corrupts. Case closed. Just on that basis alone, you don't even have to realize that the thing's run by the tribe, the most corrupt of all frickin' scoundrels on the planet. You know, just looking at the amount of money hoarded in their hands, just like the old saying, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, absolute money corrupts absolutely, too. Money is power. It's one and the same. So you can use those two expressions interchangeably. Absolute money corrupts absolutely. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. It's the same thing. Money translates into power and vice versa. Or you can't have power without money, just like you can't have money without power. And so, just on that basis alone, the fact that it has so much wealth at its disposal, how could it be anything but corrupt? And the best way to prove it's corrupt, you don't even have to, you know, research, you don't have to dig. Just look at its claims versus its deeds. It's over right there. When you realize it has all this money at its disposal, and that it claims to be concerned with human suffering and wanting to alleviate human suffering, and yet doesn't lift a goddamn freaking finger to do anything to alleviate. My God, guys, if they were even 0.1% genuinely concerned about alleviating human suffering, you would hear constantly reports about the Vatican sending millions here, billions there, sending truckloads, plane loads of foodstuffs and clothing. I'm not talking about your local convent and monasteries. I'm talking about the Vatican itself. You would constantly be hearing praiseworthy stories about the Vatican sending massive amounts of funds to alleviate third world country, you know, victims from droughts and, you know, famines and plagues, blah, 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 blah. Christ, I remember in the wake of the Katrina disaster, 50 countries offered help. Of course, goddamn FEMA turned them all away, but nevertheless, 50 countries offered relief for the suffering victims of Katrina. I don't recall the Vatican being among them, do you? I don't remember ever. Correct me if I'm wrong, if anybody's heard otherwise. I don't ever remember hearing the Vatican sending one goddamn red frickin' penny to help the suffering or any other disaster that's occurred over the years. Again, correct me if I'm wrong. Send me a link. I don't ever remember hearing ever the Vatican doing a goddamn thing, not even for window dressing freaking purposes, guys. Don't give me a link that says that the sisters of zit-laden asses, you know, sent some money here, or the brothers of butt-banging. I don't want to hear that. I'm talking about the Vatican. I know there are nuns and monks and priests out there that help people. That doesn't say a bargain thing about the Vatican. When they send money, guys, it's out of their own pockets, or it's from some meager contributions they get, you know, from some sincere dupe church members. No, I'm not talking about that. That doesn't count. I'm talking about the Vatican itself that's drowning in quadrillions of freaking dollars. What has that institution ever done? Ever? This is a challenge for you. Can anybody find something? I'd like to know. Email me. Send me an article where the Vatican has ever given funds to help anybody ever, anywhere in the world, in the past 1,700 frickin' years. Show me even one article. I'd like to see it. Shove that in the face of your friendly neighborhood Catholic the next time they're trying to shove their religion up your arse. Shove that right back at them. You want to convince me that there's any legitimacy to your institution? Never mind its religious claims, you know, blah, blah, blah. Just on the basis of that alone, their lack of charity with all the trillions of dollars they have at their disposal. Jesus Christ, guys, they could pay off the national debt of every frickin' country in the world and it wouldn't even put a dent in their coffers. They could alleviate, world hunger overnight at the drop of a dime, and that's all it would be for them. They could. And that's just with the money they have in the Vatican Bank. Then if they started selling off some of their elaborately decked frickin' shrines and temples and my God, man, if you were to add up all of the holdings they have, guys, it would boggle your mind. There's no other institution in the world, and it's been that way pretty much from day one since that bitch institution first cursed the earth with its presence. There's been no other institution in the world that has more money at its disposal than that thing. There isn't. Try to name one that competes with it. You won't be able to do it. There isn't one. More money. It has more money than entire nations. Well, technically it is a nation, but there's not only no other institution, guys, there's no nation in the world that can compete with it financially. Some people think, oh, well, the Vatican's not a threat anymore. It used to be, but not anymore. How could it not be? Just on the basis of all the goddamn money it has. Of course it's a threat. Why do you think so many nations kiss the arse of that institution, literally and figuratively? Every time the Pope comes, world leaders, including El Presidente, kiss the guy's freaking ring. They don't dare go against what he says. They look at even goddamn Hitler, for Christ's sake, signed a concordat with Pius the 12th, guys. An agreement. You leave me alone, I'll leave you alone. World leaders have always done this because they know the power that the thing has. They don't want trouble from it. It can screw up their regime. So, you know, you leave me alone, I'll leave you alone. I'll let you do your thing if you let me do my thing. I won't criticize you. You don't criticize me. It's like matter and antimatter coming together, you know, adversely. They can cancel each other out. There's genuine mad for you, mutually assured destruction. That's why all during the Dark Ages, guys, kings, for the most part, kissed the hind parts of Pontifex Maximus there, or Gluteus Maximus. They kissed his hind parts because they knew it would be their own destruction if they didn't. You think it's any different today just because they're not burning people at the stake who look at them funny? They still have the same power behind the scenes. Exchanging ambassadors, and nations still bow to the whims of this institution. Anyway, the Vatican Bank's whole history is full of corruption, downright evil criminality. Among its illegal activities over the years have been such things as tax evasion, financial scams, and money laundering for international drug traffickers. The Pope is said to be the sole shareholder of the Vatican Bank and is thus one of the richest, if not the richest men in the world. I'd argue he is the richest. He'd have to be. If he's the single shareholder, he is the richest man in the world. Or, you know, certainly not that it's all his money, but he certainly has control of more money than any other single person in the world. Yeah, you can say that with assurance. It does. And for that reason alone, the tribe, obviously, you don't have to do your homework. You don't have to do your research. The tribe obviously has control of that monkey, doesn't it? How could it not? I'm not going to allow something like that. God damn it. But again, you know, the traditional Catholics would agree for the most part. Yeah, they'd say, oh, yeah, yeah, since Vatican II. Since Vatican II, my ass. They've always have had control over that bitch of an institution. They created it. How many tribe members have been popes down through the ages, guys? How more obvious can you get than that? Get your head out of your arse, Catholic dupes out there. Anyway, the Pope not only owns, but completely controls the Vatican Bank. That is to say, though, he only controls it in so much as he's a ball player, a team player. Should he not be a team player, then you find out that he's the one being controlled, and he either learns to change his ways pretty quick, or he gets Pope John Paul the Firstified. We're going to be talking about that in the coming days. The murder of Pope John Paul the First. They killed him, guys, mainly because he wanted to clean up the Vatican Bank. Ah, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're going to let that happen, all right. He stated publicly that that was his goal. Other things, too, he said that would have caused his death. But that alone right there, more than anything else, that did it. As soon as those words passed his lips, they were already busy planning his demise. And isn't it interesting? You know when they killed him? On his 33rd day, his Pope, 33. We're right back, folks. Short break.
Constantly thinking naughty, hateful thoughts about the Jews? Do you find yourself actually wishing the gas chambers were real? Do you hate the sight of a yarmulke because it reminds you of the parasitic race that has their greedy little hands in just about everything? Well, then we have got something for you. Ask your doctor about Anti-Semitox. Anti-Semitox is a long-acting injectable lobotomy that assures you will never think those anti-Semitic thoughts ever again. May cause suicide, depersonalization, thoughts of ripping off your skin, your dick may fall off, and you may become infertile. I made the switch to Anti-Semitox. Now I don't even care if I'm a goyim slave. Thanks, Jews!
Home isn't pretty, ain't no home for me.
This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Guys, welcome back. Here's another interesting passage from the Not So Holy Book, Matthew 8:20. Jesus said, "The foxes have holes, and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head." Interesting contrast when we read that passage alone by itself, of course. The impression here given by the great Jesus is that he didn't own anything. You know, he lived a humble, self-denying life. And all the while, look at the popes, you know, living lavish lifestyles, exceeding that of, you know, emperors and kings. And that is the image that most that all Bible dupes have, you know. So, okay, fine, let's give him that. That's how Jesus lived. It's not at all. Jesus lived a very comfortable life, ladies and gentlemen. It might be true, although there's evidence he actually did own a house. That's another story. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Even if he didn't own a house, didn't own anything, it doesn't matter, guys. He still lived a lavish life. Look who he hung out with. He hung out with publicans, which were tax collectors. Those were the bankers of the day. Those are the people he chummed with, obviously. He was well cared for, wasn't he? How do you think he was able to travel the countryside and be a bum? He didn't work. Don't give me the crap. He was a carpenter. He didn't work, ladies and gentlemen. All he did is travel around and preach, and he was given money. Him and his disciples were funded. And who funded them, guys? His rich Galilean buddies, like that wedding he attended. That was a wedding of very prominent individuals. There were a lot of people there. This was the epicenter. That wedding, Cana, was in Galilee, guys. Galilee was the epicenter of all of the uprisings against Rome. That's where all of Jesus' disciples came from, with the one exception being Judas, interestingly. But all the rest of them, all of them came from Galilee. They were all rebels. But, you know, he was like the televangelist of his day. Traveled abroad preaching and was being funded behind the scenes. That's why they brought the little treasury bag with them everywhere they went. You know, Judas wanted to get his hands on. What do you think that money was? Where do you think it came from? God damn it, man. And everywhere he went, his fat arse was handsomely fed, wasn't it? Everywhere he went, banquets were thrown. He gorged himself. You can bet he probably had a pretty hefty little waistline. This image that he was so humble and self-denying. Oh, please. And don't worry, guys. He had wet dreams like anybody else. Of course he did. You don't even have control of those dreams. Your mind just does it automatically. You're going to tell me that this is what Bible dupes think. Oh, no, he was divinely protected from that. Knock it off. Oh, ridiculous. He was a frickin' human being like everybody else. Ah, damn it, man. Anyway, but once again, you know, he didn't live the life of a pauper. Just like, oh, another good example is Mother Teresa guy. How many Catholic dupes think that, oh, she was such a good woman. She denied herself. She lived in poverty, blah, 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 blah. She lived right among the poor people that she was ministering to during the day, but not at night. Not at night. She stayed in the most elaborate, decked out frickin' hotels, dined with kings and emperors, if you will, you know, heads of state, everywhere she went. She ate the finest food. Same with little Jesus. Same thing, guys. He lived high off the hog, even though he, again, you know, they want to claim he didn't own anything. Fine, I'll give him that. He didn't own anything. He didn't need to. His needs were very well met. And his wants, too, you can bet. Remember the time when the woman, some say it was Mary Magdalene, broke the alabaster jar and anointed him with expensive perfume. And of course, Judas was upset because, hey, that money could be used to, quote, help the poor. He really wanted that money in the treasury for himself. But nevertheless, remember that story. And Jesus defended her. He got off on it. He loved it. She's giving him a rub down. Oh, yeah, a little to the left. Yeah, right there. You think he wasn't enjoying that? Get the hell out of here. Knock it off. But you remember his response, though? His callous freaking response? It was complained that this money could be used for the poor. We could have sold that expensive perfume. Apparently, it was a whole year's wages to buy this rare perfume. Remember what Jesus said in response? Leave her alone. The poor you will always have with you, but me you will not always have with you. What the hell kind of a response is that? There's your great Jesus in action right there for you. In essence, let me translate what he was saying. To hell with the poor. I'm enjoying this, damn it. Now shut up. The poor you will always have with you. Screw the poor. They can wait. I want this spread all over me. My God. Yeah, could you go under my robe a little too with that? Yeah, there you go. Jesus Christ. I mean, this is so unbelievable. It's right there in your face. Is that the kind of answer you would expect from someone who's supposed to be God in human flesh? Of course, he wasn't. You can prove that from the pages of that very frickin' book. It would be one thing if it said that he was God, it would still be crap, but it doesn't even say that. But nevertheless, God, or at least the image of God, right? That's what it says. He's the express image of God's person. Not God himself, the express image of his person. Okay, so if that's what he was supposed to have been, does that sound like something that someone would say who's supposed to be the express image of God? If you understand God to be someone who's loving and compassionate, to hell with the poor. You're always going to have them. Forget about them. Right now, I'm the one that's important here. Holy Jesus Christ, man. And there's nothing holy about Jesus Christ. Anyway, does the Vatican, with its powerful bank, sound like it's following Jesus' alleged example here? You know, these are arguments you can use with Catholics. They can't come back to you with anything, you know, to shoot down missiles like that. It's right there in your face. Look at, you know, the outrageous display of wealth that this cult has. And yet, you know, the official position of Christians regarding Jesus is that he lived a humble, self-denying life. Where's the humility? Where's the self-denial? Look at that bastard, the Pope, guys. every pope. Look how they've lived. You've got to be kidding me. Even though any pope at any given time is said to be the head of the Vatican Bank, there are obviously powerful entities behind the scenes to ensure that every pope operates within a certain pre-established framework, and that any pope who refuses to do so gets eliminated, just like El Presidente. Now, the president is just a figurehead, guys. That's all. That's all the pope is. He's a figurehead. He doesn't really call the shots. Give me a freaking break. And as long as he goes along with those shots that are called, yeah, they'll let him have that illusion that he's controlling everything. The same with the president. The illusion that he controls everything. When Catholic official publications boast about the power that the Pope has, many of which I read the past few days, past few shows, what they're really saying is the church has that power. As long as the Pope is going along with what church officials want, i.e. the tribe behind the curtain that pulls all the strings, then, yeah, they just assume everybody believe that it's the Pope himself calling all the shots, but it's not. Just like the president, everybody thinks the president is the leader and he's the one who's calling all the shots. Oh, yeah, whatever, man. Whatever. The evils that any given president does, knowing that he's not the one calling the shots doesn't exonerate him. He's an evil bastard and has all these things done under his watch and doesn't care. He signs them and makes them official, signs them into law or whatever. But he's not calling the shots. It's all just arranged for window dressing purposes. Anyway, let's look at some interesting background factoids about the Vatican Bank. The precursor to the Vatican Bank, the Commission for Pious Causes, oh, you gotta love it, man, was founded in 1887. The Commission for Pious Causes. Yeah. Whatever. But you notice how they gotta use, words like that to make it sound official, to make it sound wholesome. Pious, my ass. It did not take on its current form or name until 1942 under Pius XII. That's when what is now called the Vatican Bank officially came into being. It's quite astonishing how big of a financial institution the Vatican Bank actually is when one considers that the Vatican is only 109 acres and has a population of only 800 people. Um, 109 acres isn't that big. There's one set of woods I like to go hiking in quite a bit. That's about maybe 600 acres. It's a good size, but compared to the whole town, it's just a little corner, But to think the Vatican is only 109 acres, that's freaking small, guys. Very small. And yet, it's considered a nation. Nation within a nation. Anyway, at the same time, it's not so surprising, though, that the Vatican Bank would be so big and so powerful when one considers that the Vatican is the head not only of the worldwide Catholic Church, but of the political Vatican, which is the world's smallest nation, smallest in size, anyway. But like I said, guys, it has more money at its disposal than any nation in the world. In fact, probably most nations in the world combined. Maybe, just maybe, it has more money than all nations in the world combined. Quite possibly. I wouldn't be surprised. As such, its churches, no matter where they are located around the world, are in fact, foreign embassies. They are considered foreign embassies for the Vatican State, which is why a lot of people don't realize this, but, you know, if the law was ever in pursuit of you for whatever reason, you could run into a Catholic church and legally they can't come in to get you. They can only arrest you if you voluntarily come outside. That's what happened with Noriega, if you may recall. He ran into a Catholic church and he only came out because the priest convinced him to surrender himself. But as long as he stayed in there, it's an embassy. It's neutral ground. No law enforcement agency, local, state, or federal, has any jurisdiction in a church, guys. You know, I'm sure there's been occasions where that's been violated, but technically they can't do it. Anyway, this institution is extremely secretive about its operations, once again, the Vatican Bank. Even when lawsuits are filed against it, little, if any, information is ever made available about its inward workings. Such secrecy screams of having something, indeed many things, to hide. As Forbes magazine put it in its June 26, 2012 edition, quote, because so little is known about the bank's daily operations and transactions, it has often been called the most secret bank in the world. Once again, Catholic dupes out there. How the hell do you put up with this? Or not even so much put up with it. How do you defend this bitch of an institution? How can you not see? Obviously, there's some serious corrupt wheelings and dealings going on with this frickin' thing if it has to be so secretive. That's one of the reasons, even before I gave up on organized religion and left the thing, you know, for good, the last 2 or 3 years or so that I was still going to the cult, I didn't pay any tithes or offerings. I stopped. Because I, you know, at that time I was working as a student pastor, and you know, I was able to get behind the scenes, and I was seeing things that, you know, lay people never get to see. I was realizing that, yeah, look at this. There's no accountability at all. Not only do they not publish monthly or bi-monthly or whatever, you know, a report on, you know, the monies that are collected and tithes and offerings and where it's being sent, but you can't even go into the central office and request a printout. They won't tell you. There's no accountability. Once I realized that, I stopped paying. I never told anybody because, you know, especially if you're an aspiring minister, you're setting a bad example for the flock. Why? That could get you defrocked before you even become a minister. So I didn't tell anybody, but no, I, for conscience sake, I couldn't do it when I saw what was being done and how everything was secretively being handled. And no. I also saw how the college was being run too. All kinds of sleazy wheelings and dealings. Oh my God. I won't go into that now, but so disgusting. But you know, how anybody who's supposed to be, you know, a so-called truther, can support an institution like this, you need a freaking lobotomy or something. There's something wrong with your thinking. You got to do some soul-searching, as they say. You know, if you still must cling to this phony religion because you got to have a pacifier to suck on, that's one thing. But to embrace an institution like this, can't do it. You're living a lie. I'll tell you right now, right to your face, you're living a lie. Call me up and try to tell me otherwise. You cannot embrace with one hand what you claim to be opposed to with the other. You claim you hate the Federal Reserve and all of its corruption. That's great. That's fine. But you want to embrace this thing? The Vatican Bank is worse than the Federal Reserve, guys, just because its crimes have been you know, more through the roof. It's been around a lot longer. It's been committing these crimes a lot longer. Even before the Vatican Bank existed, that institution and its sleazy financial wheelings and dealings have always been in place. Not just since the late 19th century when its prototype was first introduced. It's always been a money-grubbing financial scam of an institution. How the hell can you support something like that? You might as well complete the process and, you know, swing your other leg over that side of the fence and start embracing the Federal Reserve. Why not? What the hell's the difference? How can you protest one corrupt frickin' scam institution and yet embrace another? It's so goddamn foolish. It's ridiculous. It's scandalous. It's outrageous. Anyway, the Vatican Bank literally is above the law. It cannot be legally compelled to address wrongs, nor can it be forced to release the source of any deposit made in its vault. Did you know that? Did you know that? Legally, it can't be compelled to release any information, even in a court proceeding, which are always behind closed doors, just like Larry Silverspleen's little hearings there, you know, to collect his $6.4 billion on his $100 million investment. Unbelievable, man. So it can't be forced to release any records, nor be compelled to make known any of its you know, any of the sources of its deposits. Un-goddamn-believable.
Oh, but it has nothing to hide.
But guys, it set it up so that legally it can pull this off. Legally, it cannot be made to reveal any of this information. Can you freaking believe this?
It's like the Trading with the Enemy Act. This law prohibits United States corporations from trading with enemy powers belligerent toward the United States, except those that have special concessions from the president.
What a frickin' scam. The one institution that more than any other should come under close scrutiny and be placed under the microscope is exempt. The one that's capable of ripping people off on a grander scale than any other bank in the world, and it's totally exempt from scrutiny, let alone liability. Jesus, God damnable Christ almighty, man. But that's how it works across the board with anything, isn't it? The bigger the institution, the less under scrutiny it comes, the more well-protected it is, so that it can get away with its outrageous criminal activities. They go after the small enterprises that only commit small crimes, comparatively minor, insignificant crimes, all for window dressing purposes. Just like, you know, Martha Stewart there, her little $5,000 Peasley indiscretion. Lock her away in the slammer for whatever it was, 9-10 months. In the meantime, the big bastards on Wall Street ripping the entire nation off to the tune of trillions of dollars, the effects of which were global in scale. They not only don't have any justice served, they get rewarded. They dig their hands in deep and give themselves multi-million dollar bonuses. And nothing is done about it. The public doesn't even care. Within a week or two, the so-called Occupy movement blows away in the wind because the very scoundrels who orchestrated that whole frickin' thing are the ones that organized man, I'm telling you. God damn stupid asses we have in this world. The entrance to the Vatican Bank is overseen by Swiss guards, and only top-level curia are allowed to walk through its otherwise securely sealed doors. Imagine that, guys. Bernardino Norgara, its first president, established the practice of destroying all records of the bank's transactions, including deposits and investments, on a regular basis. Oh, they must have a lot of shredders in their offices. Imagine, that's official bank practice. Not only do they not reveal any information, but there really isn't any information to reveal. They destroy it after all the transactions are completed. Into the shredder it goes. So, you know, even if there was an audit, how could you do it? All the paper trails are destroyed again when all the transactions are completed. Unfreaking believable. So all you could do really if you went in there is expose what's currently going on at that time, not what went on last month or the month before. And all you would see is all this money, but no accounting really for where it came from, where it went. Oh, there would be some records. You'd have, obviously, you'd have to have records of, you know, the names of the account holders. That probably wouldn't tell you anything either. All the drug traffickers probably have fictitious names or some third party that they use as a middleman to take money out on their behalf. So, you know, that probably wouldn't even tell you anything doing that. They have a lot of trusts established, you know. Oh, they got any number of means. Don't worry. They're not worried that anybody's ever going to come after them. Who's going to do it? How could that happen? They, you know, they got their finger on every power lever. But just in case, guys, just in case, they got the bases covered. Just in case some insider actually had a conscience and wanted to reveal, you know, information. Don't worry, they got their bases covered. Anyway, like the Federal Reserve, Vatican Bank has never been audited, obviously. Thus, it is quite easy for funds to disappear without a trace, and quite often do. But like I said, how could it even be audited when there really isn't anything to audit? Paperwork is regularly destroyed. Anyway, as we can see, the Vatican Bank is, in fact, a central bank. And we know who's always been behind central banking, don't we? The year 1942, when this bank took on its current form, was perfect timing indeed for totalitarian elements in war-torn Europe to get the financial help they needed. This bank was, of course, all too willing to give out such loans. Particularly fond of this bank were the Italian dictator Benito Mussolini and the Mafia. Unreal, man. The clandestine nature of this financial institution provided them the perfect cover that they needed to hide their questionable business connections and practices. It's a great place for money laundering, guys. It's the place. All right, another short break there, guys.
Hello everyone, Kyle Hunt here, founder of Renegade Broadcasting. I hope you're enjoying all of the free content we have here. The reality is that it is free for you, but not free for us. Putting on all of these shows day after day, night after night, does take time and money. Sean Surplus is here with me for every show, working as our audio engineer to ensure high-quality production. Why not help him out by sending him a donation? Click on his picture in the lineup to get to his archive page, then click on the donate button. Your donations will help us to upgrade, expand, and keep pushing forward. Thank you for supporting Sean's hard work.
Guys, welcome back. So Vatican Bank, as you might guess, made a killing during World War II. It capitalized, for instance, on the looting of the treasury of independent Croatia. This was all confirmed by a 1999 U.S. State Department report entitled The Fate of the Ustasha Treasury. According to reports from the OSS, which was the CIA predecessor, and records from the U.S. Army counterintelligence, in the last days of World War II, a Croatian treasure convoy made its way to Austria, where it was intercepted by British officials. A deal was struck, money changed hands, and the remainder of the treasure was sent to Rome unimpeded by military authorities. Unbelievable. In Rome, the powerful treasurer of the Franciscan order, Dominic Mandic, made available the Franciscan accounts at the Vatican Bank. From there, the treasure disappeared and was dispersed, as usually happens to funds at the Vatican Bank. While the Vatican Bank was busy stonewalling on the Croatian treasury issue in U.S. federal court, the Vatican Secretary of State sent a diplomatic memo to the U.S. government asking it to pressure the court into dismissing the lawsuit. Look how this bitch of an institution operates, ladies and gentlemen. But the State Department failed to react, and the case is thus still pending. Yet it's clear that this suit will never go anywhere. With every query, the Vatican has made accusations of slander to save its backside. Doesn't that sound familiar? Kind of like the anti-Semitic label. Have you questioned the criminal activities of the tribe? That's what they do. Well, same here. I'm sure they use the Catholic bashing label. Oh, Christ. What a frickin' fraud, man. But to show how scandalous this whole Croatian treasury looting operation really was, notice what U.S. Army counterintelligence had to say about Ante Pavelić, the Ustasha leader. In a report issued back in 1947, quote, Pavelić's contacts are so high and his present position is so compromising to the Vatican that any extradition of the subject would deal a staggering blow to the Roman Catholic Church. Therefore, we're going to leave it alone. Unbelievable. In the late 1940s, the CIA pumped $65 million of its black ops cash into the Vatican Bank to to assist with anti-communist activities in Italy and other parts of Europe. This was part of, you know, the Operation Gladio thing. Well, it later expanded into Operation Gladio, which officially began in 1956, but this was the early stages of it. Can you freaking believe this, guys? Look at the kind of company the Vatican Bank keeps. Well, it only makes sense, right? There is honor among thieves when they can mutually benefit from their criminal activities. But yeah, again, Catholic dupes out there, don't think that this is just some recent Vatican II innovation. Oh, Christ. This, by the way, preceded Vatican II, didn't it? But don't worry, guys, long before the Vatican Bank existed, these kind of wheelings and dealings were going on all throughout the history of this monstrosity of corruption. During the 50s and 60s, the Vatican Bank prospered by laundering funds for wealthy Italian families who could not easily move money abroad due to Italian currency transfer restrictions. So the Vatican Bank served as a cover for them to do that. They don't care, guys, what the money is being used for or how sleazy the individual or the enterprise is that's laundering money through them. As long as there's money to be made, that's all they care. In fact, the sleazier the better, because that means more money can be made. Drug traffickers, guys, make a tremendous amount of money. So the Vatican, of course, has widely opened its doors to doing business with them. Why do they care? It's never going to be made public anyway. Oh, man. I tell you. And yet, there's the dupes every week, generously giving contributions like they need your frickin' money, right? Generously giving contributions for what they think is the Lord's work. But don't worry, Protestant dupes out there. Your churches do the same thing. Nowhere near on the same scale, and not necessarily doing business with drug traffickers. Although, Christ, that wouldn't surprise me, but nevertheless, your churches do it too. Oh, yes, they do. A good example of mafia involvement with the Vatican Bank was this bank's attempt in 1973 to pass off counterfeit U.S. bonds with a face value of $14.5 million. Imagine that. The Vatican has played a role in the devaluation of the U.S. dollar. It emerged that the bank's president, Marcinkus, along with financier Michel Sedona, had offered to purchase up to $950 million worth of the fraudulent bonds at a steep discount from the New York Mafia. The U.S. Justice Department intervened, however, before the deal went down. But Marcinkus and Sedona went on to bigger and better crimes, at one point controlling most of Italy's banking system. Well, then, of course, there's the P2 Lodge. By the late 70s, the Vatican Bank had become a major player in the world's financial markets. Thus, it became ever more entangled in major financial scams involving not only the mafia, but also, of course, the P2 Lodge of Freemasonry. This cozy little wedding between the P2 Lodge and the Vatican Bank resulted in the loss of massive amounts of other people's money. For example, the single transaction, one single transaction, involved the disappearance of $95 million, which was documented by the Irish Supreme Court. $95 million. And that was just one transaction, guy. As the various schemes unraveled due to a miscalculation by the late Roberto Calvi of Banco Ambrosiano, whatever. A Vatican Bank partner heads literally began to roll. This was a big scandal, guys, back in the late 70s, early 80s. The Ambrosiano banking empire became destabilized by an internal power struggle involving, of course, the Vatican Bank, as well as the mafia and the financial arm of the Catholic secret society, Opus Dei. Galvi began traveling around the world, trying desperately to effect some damage control, but it was far too late. The thing, you know, that just got out of control. Anyway, Galvi, in fact, wound up getting murdered. One document from the ongoing El Perrin versus Vatican Bank case made this statement regarding the events that led to Galvi's morbid fate. It stated, quote, during a personal conversation with very highly placed former merchant banker, who at one time held central banking authority and who personally knew Roberto Galvi, I was informed of the reason for Calvi's murder. The individual explained that Calvi's bank was on the verge of collapse due to the disappearance of hundreds of millions of dollars via Vatican Bank conduits that were connected to mafia money laundering. In desperation, Galvi traveled to London to seek a financial rescue package from a senior representative of Opus Dei, a right-wing, shadowy, wealthy, and extremely powerful Catholic sect, which is widely regarded to engage in highly dubious activities. Yeah, to say the least. It's every bit as bad as the friggin' Jesuit order, guys, if not worse. Opus Dei, however, decided against bailing out Banco Ambrosiano, and Galvi was found suicided, hanging under Blackfriars Bridge in London with rocks stuffed in his pockets, a secret rite with Masonic symbolism, guys. The rocks stuck in his pocket, obvious Masonic overtones there. Hanging from a bridge, that's a common Masonic means of elimination, very symbolic. His son, Carlo, has tried for years to disprove the suicide and has made a compelling case for a mafia hit, but to no avail, because across the board, this has involved people high up in government as well as in the church, not to mention the mafia and the goddamn P2 Lodge. Opus Dei's financial headquarters, interestingly enough, are in London. And so it would appear that this institution may have been involved in Galvi's death as well. I mean, come on, guys. Most of the members of Opus Dei are also freaking, high-ranking Masons, P2 Lodge members, and vice versa. According to London's, don't forget, yesterday I went through a big list of high-ranking Vatican officials that have been P2 Lodge members over the years, high-level P2 Lodge members. According to London's Sunday Times, the Galvi case remains open with the Sicilian mafia enforcer Frank the Strangler DiCarlo as the main suspect. Banco Ambrosiano's collapse resulted in the loss of $1.5 billion, a portion of which, estimated at $250 million, was covered by the Vatican Bank, threatening the solvency of the Vatican itself. Well, I doubt that. That's the claim that was made. But that amount of money, as big as it is, would not be a threat. Solvency of the Vatican Bank. Anyway, not surprisingly, Calvi's personal secretary died 12 hours after he did, allegedly having jumped out of a fourth floor office window at the Ambrosiano headquarters in Milan. Yeah, sure he did. Michele Sedona, Calvi's mentor, after staging his own kidnapping, was arrested for charges based on the looting of Long Island's Franklin National Bank. He died in an Italian jail in 1986 after drinking a cup of coffee laced with arsenic. Jesus Christ. Well, you know, the old saying, you dance with the devil, look what you get. God damn it, man. Doesn't matter how well-connected you are or how well-connected you think you are. Doesn't matter. You can literally be well-connected. You can even be friends with these bastards. They're going to turn on you guys. You become a threat to the system. Doesn't matter how much they've chummed up with you. That's the kind of friends these people are. Oh, you got to love it. But again, you know, how Catholics can fall for the chicanery. How many scandals have been blown wide open? Look at the big fiasco guys with the molestations. They just come out with a goddamn movie about it. A very good one, too, I have to say. It was actually well done. And yet, the people still throng en masse to that damn institution every week, open up their pockets and empty them. These instances, whether it be, you know, molestation crap and the church's cover-up of it, or you know, the Vatican Bank financial scandals, on and on and on it goes. These are not isolated incidences. We're not just looking at a few corrupt clergymen. The whole system is rotted through and through. The structure is gone. Well, it was gone from day one, but I marvel, absolutely marvel. Just like when, you know, some presidential scandal gets exposed and yet people still fall for it. They still show up at the polls thinking that's going to make a difference. Thinking that this next guy is going to be good. They get screwed over, screwed, Jude and tattooed time and time again, over and over and over, election after election, and yet they still keep showing up. But how does that saying go? The definition of insanity is continuing to do the same thing, thinking you're going to get good results. When you know, when the thing turns up peanuts every frickin' time, when do you finally realize, you know what? Screw the whole goddamn mess. It's a scam. When do you finally get it, America? Apparently never. So, you know, the Vatican can continue to engage in all kinds of scams and crimes and fiascos. People are still going to support it. Politicians can still continue to screw you over, lie to you, on and on and on and on. People are still going to lick their boots. And they're still going to get pissed off with people like me that try to wake them up to what's going on. God damn it. You know what? You deserve it. You deserve it. Sedona's FBI file, obtained through a FOIA request, runs an incredible 27 volumes. Although these documents were heavily censored prior to their release, the lawyers in the El Perrin case, Sedona is linked therein repeatedly to corrupt forces in the Vatican. Bishop, well, corrupt forces in the Vatican, the whole goddamn thing is corrupt. But, you know, names of individuals that are just over the top corrupt. Bishop Paolo Himilica was arrested after attempting to buy the contents of Calvi's missing suitcase, which had mysteriously disappeared at the time of Calvi's death, surprise, surprise, with money provided by the Roman mafia via the Vatican frickin' bank. The contents of the suitcase included a letter demanding that the Vatican refund $1 billion that it had borrowed from Ambrosiano. Himilica never served jail time, a apparently due to his close connections with the Pope, Pope John Paul II at the time. Nonetheless, the volumes of Italian police files on Himilica and his mafia associates make fascinating reading. Himilica, according to a flowchart provided by the police arm of the Italian finance ministry, was at the helm of a massive money laundering scheme with profits diverted to the Vatican Bank. Pope Paul VI, according to the same flowchart, was well aware of what was going on at the time of these particular scandals and made many of the key illegal decisions. He personally did. Unbelievable. Marcinkus, no surprise, later became chief of security for John Paul II after the obvious murder of John Paul I. God damn it, man. And yet people call him, or called him, His Holiness Christ. Didn't they just make him a so-called saint? Ah, so now Catholics around the world are addressing their prayers to this man as he roasts in hell, according to their belief system. Well, of course, but the way they think, he's not in hell. He's in heaven. Addressing their prayers to him. Oh, God damn it, man. We live, ladies and gentlemen, in a giant, a frickin' insane asylum. We really do. We really, really do. We'd probably be better off if people in actual physical insane asylums were let loose and the monkeys on the street were put behind bars. We'd probably be safer. I'm not even exaggerating. The real insane, frickin' mentally frigged up scoundrels are walking the street and holding high positions in society. But it's not even them that's the half the problem, guys. It's the average dopes on the street that not only don't have a clue, but don't want to have a clue about what the hell's going on in the world. I mean, that to me, that's the very definition of insanity. Supporting scoundrels and getting upset with those who try to wake them up. That's insanity. And yet, most people are that way. Anyway, Marcinkus, president of the Vatican Bank at the time, pled diplomatic immunity and walked free. As for the Vatican Bank itself, can you imagine, guys? You could be brought up on fraudulent charges, and how often does that happen? And you'll never get off. You can't plead diplomatic immunity. These bastards are guilty of the most heinous crimes, and oh, God damn it. That the world actually works this way. Like I've said many times, I'm still waiting for somebody to pinch me and wake me up and tell me this is just a bad frickin' dream. I won't have jalapeno peppers before bed anymore. You know, this, it just can't be this way. But it is. As for the Vatican Bank itself, its lawyers argued before the El Perin court that Marcinkus's narrow escape from justice is proof positive that no court, save the Pope's own rigged tribunals, may hold the Vatican Bank accountable for its actions at home or abroad. Yeah, well, of course, no kidding. This concept is by no means unique in Catholic teaching. In fact, it has always been the position of the Roman Catholic Church that it, the Church, is above all laws, kings, nations, and any other earthly authority, and thus cannot be judged or held liable for any wrongdoing. I read some of these quotes the past day or past show or two. But here's one right here in this context. Let's take a look at what Pope Pius VI said in his encyclical letter of August 15th. That's not Pope Pius VI. I gotta fix that. That's Pius the Ninth. Pius the Sixth, by the way, is the guy that was arrested by General Berthier, Napoleon's general there, and was brought to France, and he wound up dying in captivity. He was locked in a prison cell. That's an interesting story. Hats off to Napoleon for that one. He got sick and tired of the papacy's strutting its stuff around and sticking its chest out and all of its boasts about power, so we finally decided to do something about it. No ruler in history had ever done anything like that before. He sent General Berthier to the Vatican to arrest the Pope. God damn it, that's some cool crap for you right there. Arrested the bastard, brought him back, locked him in prison, and he died in prison. Good, good. Awesome. God damn it, that's freaking great. Yeah. Absolutely. We'll give Napoleon an award for that one. Anyway, here's what Pius the Ninth said in his encyclical letter. This is the same bastard who said that, he's the one who declared papal infallibility, too, officially. He's the one who said that, notions of freedom of conscience, liberty, justice, blah, 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 are pestilential errors most to be dreaded in a state. He was speaking specifically about the U.S. when he said that, the U.S. Constitution. Anyway, here's what this same bastard said. Here it is right here. I thought this was another quote. Well, what do you know? Show's over. We'll have to say that. Oh, a cliffhanger. All right, guys. Have a great day. We'll catch you tomorrow. Band is blowing Dixie, double fall time. You feel alright when you hear the music ring. Well, now you step inside, but you don't see too many faces. Coming in out of the rain, they hear the jazz. In other places, but the horns, they blowing that sound.
Greetings, Renegade listener. Have you been enjoying the show? Well, then why don't you share it with your friends and family? Click on the show page and then find the social media links right under the description. Or send out a message to an email list. Get the word out however you can. Don't be afraid of letting other people know that you listen to Renegade Broadcasting. You'd be surprised how many of them agree with what we're saying here. With your help, we'll be destroying the mass media's narrative in no time at all. Let's wake up the world, one share at a time.